Hello, everyone. Welcome to Talking Logistics, where we have conversations with thought leaders and newsmakers in the supply chain logistics industry. It's my great pleasure to welcome today's program, Chris Jones, who's Executive Vice President, Marketing and Services at Descartes. And today we're going to talk about pool distribution, the value of the network effect in transportation. Now, what is pool distribution? Why is it getting so much attention today? You know, what are the key factors or ingredients required to, you know, succeed in a pool distribution environment? Well, those are a lot of the questions that certainly I hear a lot of folks asking whenever this topic comes up. And I think it's one of the key areas, you know, moving forward, I think that the companies need to really be thinking about and understand, you know, what pool distribution is all about. And, you know, Chris and it's kind of in the front lines with this, working with clients that are doing this, you know, successfully. And so it's great to, you know, have him back in the program to share some insights and advice on this topic. So, you know, Chris, welcome to the program.
Great. Thanks, Adrian.
So Chris, let's start with, you know, I guess the most basic question, you know, which is, you know, what is, you know, pool distribution? I mean, I find that many companies, or people, either they don't know what that term is, or they have a misconception about it, or they may think, well, you know, they confuse it with pool, you know, having a pool point within their own, you know, transportation network. So what is it? Let's kind of start there.
Well, you know, it's a good point. There's I'll call it a realm of thoughts around this one. Essentially, the easiest way to describe it is it's essentially, let's say, a network of logistics service companies, or really carriers, specialized carriers that will take in freight from multiple parties and then leverage that all that economy of scale to then go make the deliveries for those. So if you think about a couple different ways, you think about LTL or truckload or even courier-based deliveries, they tend to be, I've got a delivery and I'm going to go make that individual delivery. Here, what you're doing is you're let's take an example of you're going to go service a mall, and in that mall might have Ralph Lauren, might have one of the limited brands shops, you know, and think of those kinds of retailers. Well, what they're doing is they're bringing all those goods together for that particular location and similar locations in the area, and that's really why the term pooling it all together, bringing it together, so they make one stop. All right, so there's a greater economy of scale. You're not having four or five different deliveries happen, and then the other part of it is, generally speaking, it runs in some kind of time definite fashion, where the others will be whenever they're roughly scheduled for, which could be like a whole day, half day, type of thing. Now, where it gets to be more interesting is, and why it's becoming more and more relevant is that you've got really now, it is this whole notion of a network of these retailers in this case, but it can be other companies as well, who decided that they are going to use a common set of practices and processes to run the business, and that's what gets them not only just the economy of scale, but the control that they want to have on their goods moving through the network. So I'll call it less sophisticated pool is, hey, send me your goods. I'll put them, group them with other people, and I'll tell you when they show up. Whereas where it's really moved to is precision tracking of, you know, right at a carton or SKU level of those goods through the network, and then all the handoffs that go on with it. So you're ensuring things are happening the way they're supposed to.
You know, and I think you touched upon some of the things I want to explore, you know, in terms of what are the critical, you know, components of making pool distribution, you know, work. But, you know, as you were describing it, I mean, it sounds to me that, you know, this is kind of a good example of, you know, multi-shipper or multi-party collaboration in transportation. And now this isn't something that's new. I mean, companies have been doing this for pool distribution now for many, many years, right? I mean, why has pool distribution succeeded in kind of this kind of collaboration model where other types of collaboration, you know, have been more challenging? I mean, what's been you know, from your perspective, why has this worked for many years for a lot of companies that are doing this?
I think there's a couple things. One of them is that many people that are doing this have decided, for instance, that they want to leverage the economy of scale, and that economy of scale could even include their competitors. So they're saying they don't really compete on transportation. They compete on the products and the store experience and all those other good things. So it's the willingness to work with other people. The other key part of it is that this is a standardized process and standardized technology for all of this. So if you will, every movement and activity has been normalized. So anybody joining this approach basically has a specific way that they can work. All right. The technology also is really a network effect. It's not, think of it as a traditional application that a shipper or a carrier would use. It's a shared application. So all the data that's coming into that gets, if you will, is visible, obviously only to the parties it's supposed to be. But think of it as now I have one source of truth for the shipment of goods, and the carrier can see it, the retailer can see it. The retailer gets to see all of its shipments across all the pool network. And if you think about the network, it's not one pool provider. It's multiple pool providers. And we've customers that have as many as 20 different pool providers in the mix. All right. And so that data is now normalized. As I said, the process is normalized. And the solutions that are available are ones that are really at that network level. So, you know, to your point, Adrian, where it's been around for a while, but it's kind of taken itself to a whole nother level is you really having network-based applications and an S&OP that really kind of drives everything.
Yeah, no, I mean, it sounds like, you know, when you look at, you know, what I call kind of a supply chain operating network, right? I mean, it this seems like the perfect model, you know, for that in terms of being able to coordinate all those different parties and having that, you know, being able to put together a standard process on that runs on that network and then being able to provide that visibility, you know, across all the different participants. So as you kind of lead, this leads me to that kind of the next questions. I mean, so obviously it sounds like, you know, the technology today and because of the network architecture and because of cloud and so forth is one aspect of it that's driving, you know, demand or interest in this. I mean, why is it in the spotlight today? I mean, what other factors are driving companies to explore it as a replenishment or a fulfillment model?
Well, you know, if you think about just retail in general and the kind of the challenge that many retailers face as they move to, you know, omnichannel retailing and the impact of online competitors, their margins are really getting squeezed. So, at the same time, stores need to be more responsive. So I'm going to carry less inventory. I need to make sure that I have the hot products I'm supposed to have. And I can be more reactive to what's going on. So when you take those kind of factors and you look at it the cost to do store replenishment, you know, what you're getting here is something you can't get from a traditional LTL or truckload approach or even parcel. They all have value, by the way, and there's not a single, like, do it all in pool as an example and you're done with it. But what you see is by leveraging the volumes that other people have, your overall transportation can be lower. So you can drive your transportation costs down much lower than you could on your own because you're really benefiting from all the other participants that are in the network. Equally, you get the response of this. So if you would have said, I only had volume that warranted once a week delivery, and it was just too cost ineffective to do it two or three times a week. Now, think about going to the mall or going to, let's call it common locations. Now I can service those maybe two or three times a week because my freight's on top of all this other freight that's moving through those lanes. So what we're really getting here is essentially we describe it as that you're getting this speed of a parcel because parcel's always been known for moving quick, right? But with more of the cost structure of LTL or truckload. So it's a very interesting paradigm for people who are really kind of at wit's end, you know, in terms of looking at their cost structure and yet serving their customers better.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I like that, description of it in terms of where it fits relative to parcel and LTL, because at the end of the day, this is kind of, it doesn't necessarily replace those other modes. It's got its role in place depending on, the objectives of the company, right? I mean, there's still going to be areas where parcel's the right approach. There's still going to be area where LTL is the right approach. But in some ways, what company, it sounds like, to paraphrase a little bit, what companies have been missing is that mix, if you will, for particular fulfillment or replenishment areas where you really wanted, the speed of parcel but the more of the cost structure around LTL, right?
Yeah, and I would say, you can even add fleet to that same story too. And looking at all of those holistically now, you can look at where you have what's called volume and density. That's where pool makes a lot of sense. And in other cases, it may be a question where you don't have that volume or density or other infrastructure to get you there that you're still going to do parcel. In some cases, you're going to cherry pick if you have a fleet, those places you want to do it. But now there's really, I'd say, four major legitimate ways you can replenish your stores effectively, or as we're also seeing, and when the definition of store is pretty broad, many of the ones I talked about were kind of the specialty retail folks, but now we're seeing it, for instance, in auto parts, and we see it in opportunity a lot of other places where people have lots of locations that they need to go serve, they need to look at how quickly and cost effectively they can do it.
Great, great. So when you look at the successful models out there, and you look at what are the critical attributes or ingredients or building blocks to do this effectively. I mean, what would those be?
Well, there are a couple factors that really kind of play into the game. One of them I already mentioned was this whole notion of density. Let's say you have quite a number of stores in the Northeast as an example. You're probably going to have a common distribution point somewhere in the country. Could be Ohio as an example like that. And what you want to do is think about what's the opportunity to effectively line haul into that, let's say, New England area where someone could rapidly then service those locations. And that's really kind of where part of it plays out. The other parts of it that we see are in areas like loss prevention. Because of the precision here, and literally we're talking about tracking every carton, okay, and knowing what's happening with every carton. And when something isn't happening, in other words, like we didn't get it, okay, or it was damaged, or we got ones that weren't supposed to come to this location, that you're in fact capturing that right at that point. So if you think about the classic challenges that go on between a shipper and a carrier with claims and so forth, damage, all this other good things that happen. Now you have a way to know what those things are. The other one that we're seeing also more interesting is using the pool point as another storage location, an ability to take, for instance, your hot products and pre-position it. Now, if you think about it, store level forecasting has always been a huge challenge. So if you, the reticence to put product all the way out to the end location, I fully get it. Okay. But if you think about aggregating that data and say, look, if I could say not one store, but what's 100 stores worth of information, I could hold it at one point. What's interesting is that, pretty much the entire U.S. can be served in one day from a pool location. So if you're talking about moving that hot product out, making sure that it's on the shelves to be sold, this is another case where you can basically pre-deploy it and then use that tracking technology to know exactly what's there and say, hey, I need this, this product moved out. So there's a lot of flexibility there. We think that, those kinds of things are where it's really driving where the opportunities exist for it.
I think, going back to something you said earlier, I would think that also having this kind of defined and standard process would be kind of another, factor that's important in making this work, right? Because you've got so many different parties involved that unless you all agree to work on that kind of process, it kind of becomes much more complex to do. Is that kind of another critical factor there?
Yeah, I know you hit the nail on the head. And as you were just saying this, we have a customer who basically had the need to move quickly into it. It really takes just days. It's a matter of days to get someone up. And the reason is the following is, all we really need are two things from the retailer. Okay, one is let's call it an ASN. Okay, that they're going to send that says, "Hey, here's all the cartons that you're going to get today," as an example, right? And have those in there, and then essentially the goods with a barcode on it. Okay, so what happens is when they show up, everything else is done. The process is there. The carrier community knows exactly what they're doing, and that all drives up into a common data system, as we talked about. So your ability to onboard somebody here is really pretty quick. Equally for the carrier community, those people that, let's say, want to participate and get a share of the people that are out there, again, the process is there. Typically what we see is people moving from one pool to another when we see them open up more capabilities. Because they already understand what they're doing. So this whole notion of a very predefined process is, it's critical to, for people getting in, and it's obviously critical for them running. And I guess my last point in the network thing, as you were saying, is that a lot of times people talk about like network effect type of activities, and in kind of very loose terms, and they break down really pretty quickly. And while you may not always want to say, "I want to follow this X process explicitly," if you really are trying to leverage the multiple parties that are in there, it's almost important, not just the data, but the process itself, because that's what really drives the data as well.
Yeah, no, great point. Now, I know you touched upon a few things already, but, in kind of building the business case, for this, I mean, what are the main benefits that companies are experiencing? I mean, what are the main benefit, buckets?
Yeah, there's a lot of them, actually. I was just going through some analysis on this. The obvious ones are transportation costs, and we can help effectively model what that's going to be. But the pool operators have fairly defined cost structures and so forth, so we can compare that and look at the volumes in either different geographies or on a broader basis like that. So that's really kind of what I would call the no-brainer. The things like claims and warranties are really important. You can look at historically what you have done in those areas and the costs that are out there. We have seen pool operators run upwards of 4 million cartons in a year with zero claims. So tight control is effective. But there's some interesting other areas here. One is store labor. Pool operates in fairly defined buckets. Typically 4 hours, could be two. If you think about store labor, if I know I only need to have somebody there for 2 hours to receive goods, I'm not going to be paying for a whole day's worth of time for somebody to be basically not, that I'm not counting on selling because I don't know about it. So that's another one. The other one is that the pool operators actually deliver into the store. They scan in the store as well. So you're going to have this whole control. You're actually going to literally think of scanning a barcode that sits on the wall somewhere saying, "Hey, I'm here and here's the goods." And again, it reduces the amount of time and effort that the store ops people have in it. The other ones that are also interesting are things like inventory. Because again, you're going to have so much tighter control of it, and you're going to know what's in transit. So if you think of classic forecasting and inventory planning, there's always uncertainty built in there in the model based on lead times and not knowing necessarily where the goods are. Well, here you're going to know it. They're going to move faster. Okay, you're going to know where they are. And let's say you don't have good inventory systems at the store. You can use the data that comes out of the store receiving part of it to drive your inventory as well. And then the last one is really on the whole payment process with your carriers. Remember I said it's one set of data, one truth. All right, so now when it comes to really paying them, we take away a lot of the administrative costs that go on, and it's pretty fact-based, and not that it isn't always fact-based, but data fact-based, I should say, that helps all of that. So there's, you think about that, that's about 4, 5, 6 different areas where you can save money. And then the last one is on, that opportunity to be more responsive, like how often are you out of stock, and what do you think that costs you, as an example. So there's another one.
Yeah, no, I think, you're right. I mean, I think the initial, the no-brainer, right, is the transportation costs, as we were talking about before, in terms of the middle ground between partial and LTL there. But I, you know, you just kind of illustrated there, it's really a wide variety of benefit buckets that this impacts. Now, you mentioned this earlier as well. I mean, I think a lot of people that are familiar with pool distribution, they might think of it as kind of retail-oriented. I mean, is this something that other, you know, would apply to other companies as well? I mean, what type of, you know, attributes does the company need to have, you know, for them to consider this model? You know, what other industries might be applicable here?
Well, as I mentioned, auto parts is a good example. Think of all the stores that they have and the need to, you know, replenish those stores. You think about distribution oriented companies that might have a lot of local outlets. It's really this whole notion of a lot of locations that need to be served and served on a very regular, you know, basis. So we see it obviously in a lot of the retail community, but equally, you know, if you think of like electrical parts or something else like that, that, you know, someone's going to come, you know, get, and you need to have, many locations, you know, either on a regional basis or on a national basis type of stuff. Other ones to me that look interesting are even things like automotive, car dealerships. Parts are a big deal there. And if you think about how all that works, and this is kind of when, you know, kind of get a chance to step back from things, most car dealerships are now packed into areas. So essentially they're operating like outdoor malls, so to speak. They're all in the same geography. And so you can now leverage, hey, I can think of places here in Atlanta where there are, you know, 10 to 20 different dealerships within a mile and a half of each other. That's another perfect opportunity of leveraging that, really that whole economy of scale and servicing, you know, faster and cheaper.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think everywhere I've lived, there's always been some kind of an auto mile type of area where you have all these dealerships, in close proximity to each other. Obviously, you know, technology, you know, plays a role here. You talked about scanning. Obviously, that's one of the factors here. I mean, what types of technology solutions are required? And, you know, obviously, when you think about this from a transportation standpoint, I mean, what requirements are necessary, or what do you need in a TMS to make it work?
Well, here's the interesting part: the traditional TMS here is really just an input into it. If think of it this way, like I said, I need an ASN. Okay, I need a shipment is really what I need. TMS in the traditional fashion is really going to be looking at getting the product to the pool operator. So what they would call an induction point. Okay, from there, the pool operator provides everything else. So essentially, let's call it a visibility and control platform that allows, and this is what we provide to all of the different participants, that allows them then to see is once that product is scanned in, where it is and where it's supposed to be going. And then that ASN, if you will, that comes in is going to be, hey, here's everything we're sending you and here's where we want it to go and when we want it to go there, right? From there, the pool operator really takes over and does the rest of that. So actually, this simplifies the transportation process here. You're really talking about consolidation of goods. It's going to be, think of it at a truckload level and moving those to someone who then takes it over and does the rest for you. And what you get to do then as a retailer or shipper here is you get to see those movement of goods and make decisions around, if you have to, around, for instance, changes that you're going to want to make and where products are going, but you have control over that whole process. So when discrepancies happen and so forth, those are not just noted by the pool operator, but in fact come back to you. So think of it as coming in every day and being able to see what's moving through your network and so forth. So really kind of the traditional approach would be the TMS try to figure out all those different moving parts here, but really what we're trying to do is say, no, the network needs to figure that out. They already know what they need to go deliver. You may have an agreed upon delivery cycle, you know, that you're going to go do things as an example, like twice a week or, you know, whatever, classic, you know, Monday, Thursday type of thing as an example. And then from there, it's going to be, they're going to pick it up and then what you're going to do is get that information back. You either can leverage it in the technology that we provide, or that can ultimately end up back in your either TMS or inventory systems or whatever else.
Yeah, no, great point. You know, Chris, we're running short on time here, so I'm just going to, you know, have a couple of just more questions. So, I mean, as you look forward, you know, how do you see pool distribution evolving in the years ahead?
I see first thing is more services at the pool level. Think of it as we talked about holding inventory. Well, if I'm holding inventory, why can't I be providing e-commerce services, direct shipping out of the pool point? It's a much more cost-effective place than doing it in a store. And again, you've got the precision and the control there to go do it. So the ability to do, and by the way, here's the funny part, and that could be parcel-based shipping as an example. So it's not, we don't consider it mutually exclusive, you know, in terms of how those things work. So so we think that there's a great opportunity for more services like that. The other thing that's happening is the technology continues to get, what I'll describe as get harmonized on, you know, the more consumer-driven platform. So traditionally, it would have been, you know, the ruggedized devices that are relatively expensive for anybody to have, right? So if you think about scanning devices that, you know, were $1,500 to $2,000. Now you're talking about a smartphone and, you know, some interesting camera technology that allows you to do relatively high-speed scanning that now I can put it on a more common platform. So now if I think about who are people that can participate in the pool network, you know, I'm really starting to open that network up to more and more capability. And then ultimately, depending on how the stores choose to receive it, if they're actually doing the receiving themselves, it may be nothing more than, you know, one of their, you know, either whether it's the store manager or a key employee has an app on their smartphone. You know, so think of that app on the smartphone for them, for the drivers, and so forth. So we think that, you know, this is going to make it a lot broader in terms of its use.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think when you look at particularly all the discussion around omnichannel fulfillment, right, and as retailers in particular, but even manufacturers, right, as they're looking at how to you know, they're kind of redefining, you know, where to fulfill orders from, everything from the store level to warehouses. And as you just talked about, you know, potentially these pool points, you know, serving up, you know, that role as well. You know, so as a way to wrap up, I mean, what advice or recommendations would you give to companies, you know, that are interested in exploring pool distributions? I mean, are there, you know, what are some lessons learned or mistakes to avoid?
Sure. Well, there's, I think, two things I would say. There are a number of people out there that have kind of dabbled in it at a lower level. I think it's really kind of time to go back and you know, here's the following things. If you have products that, again, you're moving a lot of product, you have products that are also relatively high value. Think of like high-end shoes or sneakers, those kinds of things. And you really want to look at that whole notion of what if I could do it faster and combine that with doing it cheaper. I think that's a great, great opportunity for it. You know, again, not that, you know, parcel by itself is not a bad thing, but if you're driving a lot of parcel that way and it's increasing, it's expensive, right? So that's an opportunity. The same thing on the fleet side, interesting enough, too. You could find yourself servicing areas where you've got long runs out to locations, and you might have a lot of locations in the space, but to get there takes you half a day, as an example. This may again be another place where you're maybe the fleet's not the best choice for that. So that's the kinds of things that I, you know, where I really see kind of the, how do you get, you know, what drives you to get started on this kind of stuff. You know, I think the things that I've heard also from customers that, you know, to me makes sense too, and we talked about a little bit, is it's not an all or nothing type of proposition. You know, it's really a blended one. We, you know, highly recommend, you know, looking at, you know, where are the best places to start. And you may find that, you know, you get to 20 or 30% of your business, but you don't get, you don't get the whole thing. You know, it really is going to be a dependence on infrastructure you have, you know, where those locations are that you're trying to serve. You know, and it might be an evolution.
Yeah, no, those are all, you know, great words of advice, particularly the last one. I think, you know, that's, you know, don't think of it as an all or nothing, you know, proposition. I think as we talked about earlier, I think it's the right solution for the right segment of your business or what you're trying to accomplish. Well, with that, Chris, I mean, you know, we've kind of come to the end of our time here. Like I always say at the end of all our programs, you know, we always just manage to kind of scratch the surface on this topic. But, you know, certainly I think we certainly addressed some of the key questions and at least provided some food for thought and some things for companies to consider with regards to pool distribution. So again, thank you for making the time to be with us today.
Great. Well, thanks, Adrian. I appreciate the opportunity and good to see you as always.
And I want to thank those of you that joined us today. You know, if you do have a question, you know, for Chris, and you're watching this on demand, either on the Talking Logistics website or the Descartes website, you can post a question there, and I'm sure that Chris will be more than happy to respond via that medium. Again, thank you all for joining us today, and look forward to seeing you in a future episode of Talking Logistics. Have a great day. Okay.